Matthew chapter 5, Sermon on the Mount. Well, when Jesus saw the crowds coming to him, he went up into a mountain and sat down, and his disciples gathered round him, and he began to teach them. I wonder if he did that to make it so that the people who wanted to come to hear him had to actually make the effort to walk up a mountain so that they could hear his message. I just wondered if that is why he did this. So, this is now the basic principles of his message. Blessed are the poor, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, because they will be comforted. Blessed are the poor in spirit, or the humble, because they're going to receive that which God has promised. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, because they shall be filled. So, those are the people who want to be good, who want to be righteous and perfect, but like all of us, they can't be. Blessed are the merciful, for God is going to be merciful to them. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, because they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness, because they're doing that which God wishes, and theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, repeat all kinds of wicked lies and slander against you, because you follow me. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad in that day, because you have a great reward prepared for you. And this is how the prophets who lived in the old times were also persecuted. So Jesus is addressing himself to ordinary people, to poor people. Most of the people in Palestine were poor, to the humble people, to the brokenhearted, and to those who wanted to be righteous but didn't feel they could quite get there. And this is the mass of people of the world in which we live. And he tells them, you are no less than the prophets who went before you. If people say bad things about you, well, you are just like the prophets. So he's elevating those ordinary people to a very high standard, a very high level. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt loses its saltiness, then it can't be made salty again, and it's worthless and shall be thrown out and trodden underfoot. So then we ordinary people, we poor people, we people who are insignificant, we people who are not fully righteous as we would like to be, we are the salt of the whole earth. You are the light of the world. In another place, Jesus said, I am the light of the world. But here he says, you're the light of the world. So if we're baptized into Jesus, all that's true of Jesus becomes true of us. He was the light of the world, we are the light of the world. He was the seed of Abraham, we are the seed of Abraham. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Nobody lights a candle and then puts it under a bucket. Instead, he puts it on a candlestick so it can give light to everyone in the house. Likewise, so may your light shine before men, so that they will see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. So then what that shows then is that we are not intended to be secret Christians. And in fact, if we are secret Christians, if we do not tell anyone else about our faith, eventually our light will go out. Yet we're all very shy, aren't we, to talk to other people about our faith. Don't think that I've come to destroy the law and the prophets. I've not come to destroy them, but to fulfill them. Remember that so long as there is heaven and earth, not one little bit of the law is going to pass away, not until all things are fulfilled. So whoever disobeys even the smallest of the commandments and teaches others to do so will be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But he who obeys the law and teaches others to do so will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. I tell you that you shall only enter the kingdom of heaven if you are more faithful than the scribes and the Pharisees. You have heard in the old time that people were told, do not commit murder, and anyone who does will have to come to judgment. But now I say unto you, Whoever is angry with his brother without a cause will come to judgment. And whoever calls his brother, you fool, will be brought before the council. And whoever calls his brother, raka, will be in danger of total destruction and condemnation. So if you're about to offer your gift on the altar, and then you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and immediately go and reconcile with your brother and then return and offer your gift to God. So the idea is that even if your brother has something against you, not simply that if you've got something against your brother, but if your brother's got something against you, well, try to reconcile. Because God does not want to accept sacrifice from people who are separated from their brethren. If somebody takes you to court, immediately settle the argument with him while there is time before you get to court. Because once you are there, he'll hand you over to the judge, and he will hand you to the officer, and you will be cast into prison. And there you will stay until you pay the last small penny. So he's saying, don't trust in human beings to give you justice. Don't trust in that. Don't go that way, but just reconcile by all means, whatever it costs you. The idea is that one of the basic principles of the teachings of Jesus is reconciliation at all costs with our brother. You've heard that it was said, do not commit adultery. But now I say unto you, whoever looks at a woman to lust after her has committed adultery with her in his heart. So all the time Jesus is saying that it's about the state of the heart. If you hate your brother in your heart, that is as if you've killed him. He said that earlier. So then this is what true Christianity is about the state of our mind. So if your right eye makes you sin, then pluck it out and cast it from you. It's better for you to enter into life without that part of your body than to have your whole body thrown to condemnation. If your right hand makes you sin, then cut it off and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one of your limbs than for your entire body to be thrown to condemnation. So this is pretty tough language of self-control and being willing by all means to remove from ourselves the possibility of leading ourselves into temptation. It's no good praying, lead us not into temptation, if we actually lead ourselves there. It was also said that anyone who divorces his wife must give her a bill of divorce. But now I say to you, if a man divorces his wife for any cause apart from her unfaithfulness, then he becomes guilty of making her commit adultery if she marries another time. And the man who marries her commits adultery as well. So again he's saying, it is better to reconcile. This again continues this theme, to not live with arguments and bitterness, but to by all means get over them. You've heard that it was said by those of old time in the past, keep your promises and do what you have made a vow to God to do. But now I say to you, don't use any vow when you make a promise. They used to say, well, I promise this to you, and I swear by God that I shall do this or that. But now I say unto you, make no vows when you make a promise. Don't swear by heaven, because that's God's throne, nor by earth, for that is the footstool of his feet, nor by Jerusalem, because it is the city of the great king. Don't swear by your head, because you can't make even one hair white or black. Just say and allow your yes to be yes and your no to be no, because anything more than that comes from the evil one. In other words, be totally honest. Because the implication of all these vows was, well, I'm not completely honest with my words, but if I use a vow, if I say, ah, yeah, I swear by God I'm telling the truth, that implies that you're not completely honest in your words at other times. But he's saying, be completely honest with your words. And that is a real challenge. You've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But now I say to you, Do not take revenge upon those who do you wrong. If you're slapped on the right cheek, then offer your left cheek too. If you're taken to court so that your shirt is taken off you, then offer your coat as well. If somebody, and I think he has in view one of the Roman soldiers, forces you to carry his backpack for 1 kilometre, offer to carry it 2 kilometres. When you're asked for something, give it to the person who asks you. When somebody wants to borrow something, then lend it to him. You've heard that it was said, love your friends and hate your enemies. But now I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may become the children of your Father who is in heaven. For he makes his sun to shine on the righteous and upon the bad alike. And he gives rain to the just and to the unjust. Why should God reward you if you're only going to love the people who love you? Even tax collectors and sinners do the same. And if you talk only to your friends, have you done anything particularly special? Even the unbelievers behave like that. Be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. This is all a great challenge because, of course, you love your friends, you're nice to your friends. But Jesus turns this all on its head and says, yeah, that's just normal, that's what everyone does. I ask you to love your enemies. Now, this is so difficult, but this is the challenge of true Christianity. This is why also a true Christian will not take arms, will not take weapons and go out to fight their enemies. This is absolutely forbidden by the clear teaching of Jesus here. And so it is a contradiction in terms for somebody to take weapons and go out and say, yep, I'm going to go and fight a just war against my enemies. Well, I'm sorry, but this teaching of Jesus is absolutely against that. And that is where true Christianity will never be popular, because it runs right against the grain of all that naturally people in society would like to believe is true. But this is a radical call. And this is why those who refuse to go to the army, conscientious objectors, those who objected because of their conscience to service again in fighting enemies, because of these words of Jesus, they were actually the brave ones. It's far braver and far harder to do that than it is to just do what everybody else does and go and charge off against your perceived enemies.